we'll see how this progresses today. Whoever's making announcements today, I'll say this now because I'll forget it later. I got a text from Sue this morning. Jerry fell sometime last night or overnight. Paramedics had to come out. They didn't think he needed to go to the emergency room, but he's kind of bummed up and scraped and bruised, and she's staying there to watch him this morning. So Sue and Jerry, if you're watching, we're thinking about you. Okay. All right. Let's talk for very briefly. I don't want to take away class time for new material, but if we don't have the old material kind of in grasp, the new material doesn't mean as much. What have we seen so far about the structure of the Sermon on the Mount? If that makes any sense to you. I think the good writing always has a structure to it. And I don't think we should be surprised that if God is inspiring these men to write, that it's no surprise there's a structure to it. And in this sense, Jesus himself is delivering this sermon. And it's not just top of the mind stream of consciousness that he's saying when he's thinking about something. There's a structure to it. What have we seen so far? How does the Sermon on the Mount, how does it start out in chapter 5? Okay, and what did we decide that's kind of about?
Well, I think all of Christ's teachings try to prepare people to be prepared to be part of his kingdom. So it's all connected in that way. You know, well, actually, I always think that very first verse of Beatitudes, he's emphasizing you've got to be humble, you've got to be selfless.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
This also shows the difference in what the world sees, the type of attitude you should have, that this is what God expects us. As Christians, this is what we should have.
Yeah. So, anybody else on the Beatitudes? Read.
This kind of sets up the whole chapter. I mean, everything really kind of refers back to, if you talk about great writing, that's what you want to start off with, is your central theme first.
Yeah, the kind, Bill.
I look at that. That first part really deals with how you're blessed and why you're blessed as we go forward. It just deals.
Yeah, every one of the Beatitudes starts with what? Blessed. Otherwise, meaning, how can we translate that? Yeah. Happy?
Yeah.
So it starts out telling us that the person that's really going to follow God is this kind of a person. And all of those don't make immediate sense filtered through our human lens. Blessed are those who mourn. I don't typically look back at times I have mourned and it's happy. But when you put it in the context of the Beatitudes, of that we mourn because we're poor in spirit, it comes back to that humility, the kind of person that we need to be. We hunger and we thirst for righteousness. We are merciful. We're pure in heart. We are peacemakers. But then at the very last part of that beatitude, though, is it ties it all together that if you're this kind of person, blessed are you when you're persecuted for righteousness. It's honest. There's that expectation that is there. But we start out with, this is the kind of person, in really broad terms, that God wants us to be, and we might be persecuted for it. Okay? Then he goes into salt and light. And what did we say that was primarily about? One word that starts with an I. Influence. Okay? So if you're going to be this kind of a person in the Beatitudes, now you're going to influence people by the way that you are. The salt, as we left with you, for you to figure out, what kind of flavor do you bring to God's kingdom? What kind of preservative are you? But then you're also the light. You're doing good deeds so that the Father can be glorified. Okay? Then when we get to verse 17, he tells them, "Do not think that I came to destroy the law and the prophets. I did not come to destroy but to fulfill." And then in verse 20, what does he tell them? Yeah. Here's the religious folks of the day, the religious leaders, and he tells them, you have got to be better than they are. And part of that is that they weren't really sincere about what they were doing. They did not live what they were preaching. I think a lot more of the Sermon on the Mount connects us to that. But in another dose of honesty, he's telling them, the people that are listening, and telling us, you've got to be better than what's going on right now. They're missing the mark somehow. You've got to be better. And then he starts to kind of demonstrate and make them stop and think and understand what he's saying. There are those six sayings of, you have heard, but I say. Okay? And then he starts out with murder. And we can use this one as kind of an example for all of them to save time. What was the issue with you shall not murder? Was that true? Yeah. But what was the problem that he was addressing? It's more than that, right? It's not just the strict letter of the law that you shall not go out and whack somebody on the head till they're dead. It's in the heart. And if you get to the point that you are, I'd kill Eric if I get away with it. That's wrong already. Okay? And that's like a lot of the rest of these. It's a lot deeper than just the literal wording that's there. I think we had gotten through all of these except maybe verse 43, I think, is where we stop. This is the last of the six. You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. Do good to those who hate you. And pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. Verse 45, why? That you may be sons of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good and sends rain on the just and the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do it? Therefore you shall be perfect just as your Father in heaven is perfect. What does this one have to do with your heart? Who are we supposed to be open to? Who are we supposed to be receptive to? Who are we supposed to be influential with? Everybody. Okay. And it's not acceptable just to put a label on somebody and say, she's my enemy, he's my enemy. We are supposed to be these kind of people to everybody. And again, how did the Beatitudes end? If you're this kind of person, blessed are you when what? When they persecute you. Right. Now somebody, I want at least 10 volunteers to tell me how easy that is. I'm waiting. That's difficult, isn't it? It's challenging. And probably we fail miserably at it often. But we have to see the kind of people we're supposed to be. This doesn't call for you to give an example, just to think. Have there ever been times that you've gone through your day and you've done something, and as soon as you do it or an hour later, you just absolutely feel miserable about it? I could have handled that a better way. You know, that's a daily occurrence for me. Okay. Question would be, do you recognize those, and are we moving forward to get better about it? You know, and I think these words would really ring true, especially in some of the apostles' ears down the road. When Jesus says, love, verse 44, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. Can you think of a time in Jesus' life later on, many times, but one specific instance that a lot of this comes together? Yeah. His trial, his crucifixion. Beat him, spit him, put a robe on him. Let's make him a crown of thorns. Push it down into his head. He was there for all of those people too. You know, maybe it's just my personality. I don't know. But I think as I read the story of the crucifixion, one of the things that sticks out in my mind the most is when he's on the cross, and the group say, you know, come down from there now and we'll believe in you. Boy, what an opportunity would that have been. But it would have been short-lived. It would not have fulfilled the purpose of God. So start looking at the structure. It's the kind of people that we have to be. We have to be influential. It means more than maybe what you have been taught. Your righteousness has got to exceed that of the religious leaders. And then we start to expound upon that a little bit more when we get into chapter 6. Couple of specific things. Verse 1. Take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds before men to be seen by them. Otherwise, you have no reward from your Father in heaven. Therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogue and in the streets, that they may have glory from men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But when you do a charitable deed, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, that your charitable deed may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will himself reward you openly. All right, first one is about charitable deeds, and it says, don't do it this way, do it this way. What are the two different positions? What's one way?
Don't make a spectacle of yourself
in the church. What were they doing? You know, I'm gonna give some money for this poor family that just lost everything. Okay. But what do I do in the negative sense? What do they do before they do that?
They talk about their
You gonna join me? Come on, Bill.
Wasn't there a large brass thing that they put their money into when they walked into the temple?
When they're given into the treasury.
They would make sure they would roll around and make a lot of noise, no matter what it was. They loved to put those in there, so everybody would, who threw all those in there?
Yeah.
Like that.
Calling attention to this good deed. But we're also told in another place we're told specifically, but in here, it does tell us, the end of verse 2. Why are they doing this? To have the glory or the attention of men. That's their purpose. And it says, okay, you do that. And that's what you want. And guess what? That's what you get. That's your reward. How's the other way to do it? That's acceptable that Jesus teaches. Do it in secret. Do it in private. Do it without. That's the way to be done. And if you do it that way, where do you get your reward? In heaven. Okay? Was Jesus making this up about blowing trumpets where they go in and do stuff? No, that was an occurrence. That would happen. So charitable deeds are the first time. Again, this is the way things need to be done versus how they are done. Verse 5. It's really hard for me to get this one. not understanding what's being said, but people would do this. Okay. And when you pray, you shall not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogue and on the corner of the streets, that they may be seen by men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But when you pray, go into your room, and when you have shut the door, pray to your Father who is in the secret place, and your Father who sees you in secret will reward you openly. And when you pray, do not use vain repetitions as the heathen do, for they think that they will be heard for their many words. Therefore, do not be like them, for your Father knows the things you have need of before you ask him. So, the negative aspect, what were people doing with prayer?
Very public, showy.
Loud, ostentatious, repetitive terms. Again, for what purpose?
To be seen.
That they may be seen by men. Okay. Think about that attitude for just a moment so it doesn't bleed over for various things that we do. What is prayer? Talking to God. Okay? But the issue is, I want to do it in a manner that men see me. I want people to know and think, wow, look at that. Listen to him. Look at him, what he's doing. What was the beatitude, the first one? Blessed are the poor in spirit. Humility. Instead of this showy prayer out in the open, how should we do it?
By ourselves, but in a more private closet or whatever.
So we should not have public prayers here, right? Men certainly shouldn't go up high and pray. No. I get the impression, this is kind of personal prayer. You know, during these times that they would have religious worship, people are going to break out. You know, I got to show them I'm not just that, you know, Sabbath day guy. I'm going to do it every day. You know, I got such a relationship with God, I'm going to bust out and you know, prayer. When you pray, do you ever talk to God about your weaknesses and things that you need and things that you've done wrong and you wish you'd be better on? That's a large part of it. I kind of get the idea, and this is kind of reading in there, but I kind of get the idea that if you're standing on the street corner and you're wanting to be seen and get a reward from man, you may not have that same kind of conversation with God.
Let's say one or two. I think all of these things, most of the things Christ is teaching, he's teaching individually. So, you know, if we're kind of praying and, like I said, we're admitting our weaknesses and we're asking for help and that sort of thing, that's not something you want to gather a crowd, you know, that, like you said, you would be. But he's not talking.
Levi.
In the next chapter, verse 5, it says, when you pray, you shall not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the corner of the streets, that they may be seen by men.
Yeah, it's why we do it. Come on, man, listen to me, Bill. It's not funny and it's not even related. I don't know why it made me think about it because she's talking about, you know, you don't have to verbalize it. I don't know. It's been 5-10 years ago. I don't know if it was something we were specifically doing here or maybe one of the children's class. I can't remember why, but it was a push on, you know, knowing all the books of the Bible, Genesis through Revelation. And I was sitting at a traffic light in Greenwood, Mississippi, and you know, Genesis, Exodus. I know my mouth is going blah, 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 blah. And I looked over and there's somebody looking at me like, what are you, you know, what are you doing? I smiled all the way back home just thinking about that, practicing that. Okay, and then versus an ostentatious prayer that is for show, look at this, what we sometimes call the model prayer. 9, in this manner, therefore, pray. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And do not lead us into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. For yours is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen. This is, you know, 6 months of study, just the model prayer. But we're not going to, I'm trying not to do that. What do you get from the model prayer? If he's telling us, you know, he tells them how to pray in the context of do it in private, do it in secret, don't do it to be seen by men. So what do you get out of the model prayer?
Attitude,
meaning,
humility.
The end of verse 9, the first two sentences in my Bible, what does that do? Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Yeah. In that relationship of you talking to God, which one's the greater? Without question. Versus, I want to be seen by men. You know, you acknowledge that relationship you have with God immediately. And if you're really sincere and you think about it and you're sitting there in private, what a privilege it is, what a blessing it is to be able to talk to God. That don't. Or only pay lip service. It doesn't mean anything. You know?
To her point, I think that's what these aren't new concepts. These are actually, Jesus is actually pulling from the old, bridging the gap in what they lost and where they should have been. And it's matters of the heart. And it matters as to what's sacred. Our lives are not sacred in the sense that it's all about us. Our entire life is for the sole purpose of serving God. They had lost sight of that, and their leaders, who were supposed to have reminded them of this, and that the Levites, they should have known how important it was to address God in His name and be sacred. They had, I mean, this was drilled into them from the very beginning. That's what had been lost, just as it's lost today in some ways. But you know, granted, I do agree, kind of back a little bit, that by all means, this is talking about individual effort, individual worship, and where we are in place to God and humility. But that can apply to anyone who gets up there at that podium and says a prayer also.
Same thing. If you get up there not to address God, but to put on a show for the people that are listening, I think it would be unfair that the people that are listening maybe can't do it the right way and still have that reverence with God, but you didn't get past the ceiling as far as your prayer goes. So if we start out that prayer recognizing our relationship with God, and we are not low on the totem pole, we're probably under the totem pole. Verse 10, attitude adjustment again. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. We've got... Boy, attitude is a nasty word because I have to work on it all the time. It's just tough. But we have to, I have to adjust my attitude daily, hourly. I get off on the wrong track. I'm thinking about the wrong things. But where prayer is that God's will be done. And isn't that only fitting when he is the sovereign and he created me? Verse 11, what does that mean? Give us this day our daily bread. What does that show? Utterly dependent. Do you really believe that? Yeah. Most of the time, but sometimes we get sidetracked and we think about, I'm pretty sharp. I'm pretty good. Eric, confession time, or you've got another comment?
Probably both. Yeah. Talking about the word attitude, I also think of the word perspective in this prayer, because where is first, we talked about the humble kind of perspective and approach right at the beginning, but then he talks about your will be done, your kingdom come. That's all future oriented. It's not intently focused on what's happening to me right now, which is definitely something I can be extremely guilty of in private prayer, only focusing on right now. And Jesus is demonstrating, no, think about what God has in store for you. Get that perspective in your heart first. And that creates the right environment to really focus on what really matters right here. What really matters is just give me what I need to get by. That's all that really matters. Now, that's easy to sit here and say, perspective.
And don't get tired of me saying this, but keep thinking about the structure of the Sermon on the Mount. And this thread we're talking about, as soon as we're told in the Beatitudes what kind of people we need to be, even if we're going to have to be persecuted, salt and light, our influence. Influence is something that's going to happen. Maybe happening right now, but it's going to happen. So we have to keep thinking about, as long as God lets me be here, what's my influence? What's my purpose? How am I going to get there with his help? I'm going to slaughter this because my brain won't pull it together right now. Y'all will probably recognize when I'm talking about it. There's that saying, that motto, that philosophy, that you've got to take care of yourself before you can take care of others. If we get to the point that we're not in tune with God, it's a lot less likely or effective than we're doing something right for somebody else. We've got to take care of ourselves. When Jesus was talking about, you've got a brother that's got a speck in his eye, what did he tell them to do first? Get the log out of your eye first. Then you'll be able to go talk to your brother. You know, and if it wasn't so serious, that, can you imagine the cartoon for that? You know, I see Alan, he's got this little bitty speck in his eye, and I'm really concerned about that, and I've got this 8-foot log hanging out that I don't even see. I'm probably hitting Alan in the head with it, you know, when I'm going to talk to him. It's a great cartoon it would be if it wasn't so serious. Okay, and then we're supposed to forgive our debts as we forgive our debtors. Stop there just a moment, because verse 14, we stopped there a minute ago. For if you forgive men their trespasses, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. Okay? Now, to make sure you understand that, 15, but if you do not forgive men their trespasses, neither will your Father forgive your trespasses. Do not lead us into temptation, deliver us. Okay. So the model prayer is kind of simple. And what would that take? 30 seconds if we read it? Versus these long, repetitious prayers. Now, we know that that doesn't say that every prayer has to be really short. We know that Jesus went into the garden to pray, and he was there long enough that the people went with him. What happened?
Fell asleep.
You know, a couple of times. I can fall asleep in 30 seconds, but that wasn't, I don't think, the point of that. But it's probably more like the prayer Eric is talking about. You know, it's okay, I think, to sometimes pray, God, be with all those people we know that are sick and need your help. But there are times that you need to pray for an individual. You need to pray for a specific issue. And depending upon, you know, your skin that's in that game, that prayer might be longer. Parents, have you prayed for your children sometime that it takes more than 10 seconds? Yeah, it does. For those of you that are younger parents, it never stops. It's going to stay with you. But in the context of they're doing it wrong this way, here is a way that it works. Okay. Then the third one, 16. Moreover, when you fast, do not be like the hypocrites with a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces that they may appear to men to be fasting. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But you, when you fast, anoint your head, wash your face, and so that you do not appear to men to be fasting, but to your Father who is in the secret place, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. Okay? In the negative sense, the fasting, what was wrong with it?
Doesn't show men that you're doing.
Man, I'm fasting today. I love God. He loves me. Now, what are you supposed to be like? Nobody really should know, right? That's something between you and God. The three things that we talked about, charitable deeds, prayer, and fasting, what was the common things there? They were doing it the wrong way for what reason? To be seen by men, and if that was their objective, it says what? They got their reward. That's what they were after, and that's what they got. But otherwise, do it in a way not to call attention to yourself. Don't blow trumpets when you give. Don't stand up in high places and shout out loud when you pray. And when you fast, don't look like you just fell off the truck. Do it in a way that is between you and God. That relationship, that attitude, we're doing that. Okay? Goes right into, again, with the structure, with verse 19. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasure in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Masterful teaching, masterful writing, if it was going to be written down, the structure is there. Oh, we got 5 more minutes here. Can't be yet. Okay. How would you sum up those couple of little statements, verses 19 through 21? What do you come away with that? It's hard to get it in our heads, but this lifetime that we live here, how does that compare to eternity? It doesn't. I can't comprehend that. Man can't comprehend that. We're driven by bills. We're driven by deadlines. Now, there's a good thing to deadline if we do it the right way, because we must all appear before the judgment seat. That's a deadline, we just don't know when it is. I hate that, in a way. What do you think this is? I think one of the keys there, because I think it's different maybe for all of us, what about your treasure when it talks about in terms of treasure? Not necessarily the right thing, but I saw an interview last week with Shaquille O'Neal. Anybody that doesn't know him, he's a 7-foot monster that played basketball at LSU, Los Angeles Lakers, one of the best there are. But Shaquille O'Neal has been extremely savvy with his money, and he owns JCPenney. He owns that. And a bunch of other brands that we don't, you know, necessarily know about. But he said he overheard one of his children, I think he's got 3 boys maybe. He overheard one of his children, they were discussing among themselves that they were wealthy. And he walked in the room and said, you know, I wasn't eavesdropping, but I heard that. Y'all ain't wealthy. I am. but he's got a provision for them in his will, so he said that until they get a college degree and get a job, they ain't got nothing. You know. But I'm glad that Chelsea and Eric sit beside each other, because the treasures on earth versus treasures in heaven. You got to kind of have a little bit of both of them, but you can't let that on earth become the treasure thing, and it's perspective. You know, what's going to happen later? I think that second bell got us. Where did we get to so I can mark it for next week? All right. As you're reading this week, continue to look at the structure of how this follows and fits together.